Welcome back to The Inspired Educator, empowering new teachers to thrive. I'm your host, Dr. LaToya Crockett, and I'm so excited to have you join us today. This podcast is all about supporting new and aspiring teachers as they navigate the joys and challenges of teaching. Whether you're a first-year teacher, a substitute teacher, or transitioning into education, we are here to uplift and support you as you navigate your teaching journey. Today's episode is centered on mindfulness in the classroom. To help us navigate this topic, I reached out to an old colleague of mine, Martin. Why, hello there, Martin. Welcome to The Inspired Educator.
Hi, thanks for having me. This is fun.
Before we jump in, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? How did you get into education and why are you so passionate about mindfulness in the classroom?
So in undergrad, studied peace studies, and I started a program in a jail for kids to learn, kids that were being tried as adults. And after doing that, you graduate with peace studies, you got to figure out what you're going to do. So I transitioned into teaching in a classroom setting through Teach for America and did that for 2 years in South Louisiana in a rural district in South Louisiana, and then spent a couple years, I went back to where I studied in undergrad, kind of regrouped, did another couple years teaching there. And then I went to Cambodia for a couple years to work with teachers to try to implement child-friendly pedagogy. After that, I came back to St. Louis right at the beginning of COVID and started working at two schools here in St. Louis, teaching science and then physical education. And I transitioned towards mindfulness as a part of the coaching work I was doing. It's mental performance coaching is based out of mindfulness principles, and it's a way to hone in and build agency of athletes in mental performance coaching often, but also high level executives. And then, but you can offer these skills, they're super simple skills to kids. And if you can bring those skills into a classroom setting, you're really able to engage kids in new profound ways, because it's this concept of neuroplasticity. Like, I remember learning about that in grad school, and that was in 2016. And so it's like a decade old now, but what I was learning about then is like very outdated. And like what I'm explaining, what I can explain now to elementary school kids about, like, hey, memory consolidation, if you want to like remember what we just did, take a minute and just relax. Don't do anything. Let it download, you know? And so it's just an exciting thing to think about how kids can incorporate that into their simple lessons. And so that's why I'm excited about it with kids.
I definitely like the last part about how you can easily integrate it into the classroom with our students. This being testing season right now and benchmarking for even lower grades, they need mindfulness right now. And to be very honest with you, the adults need mindfulness right now. The culture, the environment in the building has definitely shifted with it being the end of the year. So I think this podcast is very timely for a lot of our educators. With that being said, when you think about the classroom context, and you just spoke to it, but I'm going to ask you again, what is mindfulness in the classroom context? And when we think about our new teachers that are entering education, why do you think it's particularly important for them when they're just trying to figure out like what they're doing in the classroom?
So mindfulness is non-judgmental awareness of what's happening right now. And I came into this, I had been teaching for 8 years, or working in education for 8 years when I came into it, and started practicing, like doing the meditating in the morning. I did an MBSR course, highly recommend if you're interested in learning. And what I discovered from teaching the kids, so I was like, okay, let's see how our body feels, is I found that I had an incredible, like I clenched my jaw all the time when I was teaching. And what was wild about it was the kids would be doing, everything would be fine. And I'm like, just fighting down as hard as I possibly can. Like something's terribly wrong. And like, there's no reason for me to be upset. And so mindfulness is about reorienting yourself to seeing like, what's going right here, you know, and like what. And so you might find if you start practicing that it's too much, there's a lot going on that you didn't realize. But oftentimes you can start to like, when you focus your attention on mindfulness and with mindfulness and you focus your attention on what's actually going on in your classroom, you can start to like direct attention in ways that you allocate your attention appropriately towards, let's say, kids that are behaving. And you get more of the behavior that you want to see out of your kids just by bringing a different energy into the classroom.
So I'm over here jotting down notes because so many things that you just said resonated with me. One, paying attention to what is happening right here, right now in the moment is key. And then you said towards the end how we can use mindfulness to allocate our attention appropriately. too often we focus on the wrong behavior, and that causes the behavior to escalate. So we can already see how mindfulness is helping the educators in the classroom.
And there's research that points to the fact that if you don't have a practice yourself and you start forcing the kids to practice mindfulness, that it's not going to be helpful. And so, like, if I'm not going to get on here and say anything that's like, oh, this is going to change your classroom, because it won't unless you let it change yourself first. At the same time, it can improve your classroom significantly when you start seeing, you teach these skills to the kids, and if you practice it with the kids, they'll start doing it. And like, they'll see you get upset, and then they'll start doing breathing. And then you're like, oh.
Yes. They're using your words, your skills against you. I've had kids
verbal. Not against, for me. There's no against here. We're on the same team.
Let me rephrase. I've had students assist me and let me know that I need to utilize my techniques. We call them breathing techniques because that was my focus at the time. So they would remind me, Dr. Crockett, just breathe. Just breathe. Right. Thank you, friend. I appreciate that reminder. What are some common misconceptions around teaching mindfulness in the classroom? What are some things that you have heard, that you're researching, that you have seen?
I think the first is that it can do all things for all people. It's allocating attention and awareness is the first step to learning in a lot of ways. And so it allows for a lot of learning to happen in your classroom, but it's an enormous body of work and knowledge that's really difficult to say, this is what it is, and this is how you should install it in your specific classroom. It should be something that you can go to as a way to like calm yourself down. So I also think that there's a thing that's important also is what I've seen in a lot of classrooms is like silence and quiet being used as a punishment. And so like, put your heads down. Maybe you've seen that one.
Oh, yes.
And then this becomes this negative thing instead of a positive thing. And so I think that like, oh, we need to calm down is one way, like, yeah, that can be appropriate. But more powerfully can be, we just did a really good job with this thing. Let's notice what that feels like. And then that orients your classroom towards like, oh, let's say we got our pencils out fast. Let's take like 5 deep breaths to appreciate that accomplishment. And it slows it down. It like, I mean, that's what Huberman talks about, like memory consolidation happening that way. Like you need to do nothing after you do something well if you want to remember it. And so it just gets us off of this like automated go, 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 go mentality. And I would argue that it's an escape from a tech-driven lifestyle that these kids are living in terms of they're giving all of their dopamine to their phones. They're on the computer, in your classroom, they're getting on YouTube, they're getting on whatever it is they're getting on, TikTok, who knows. But their brains need to rest. And it feels good for most of the kids when we give them an opportunity for their brains to rest.
So thinking about those individuals who are hesitant to implement mindfulness in the classroom because of the misconceptions that they may have, do you have any strategies, any thoughts, any ideas of what can we do to help them overcome that?
Yeah. If folks are hesitant or skeptical, then they don't implement it. Don't take it. I think that you can find, if you reorient your classroom and you say, okay, I'm showing up today, I'm going to do what I can to give my attention to kids that are behaving. I'm going to, when things go well, stop and acknowledge that they're going well. And I'm going to talk about taking 3, 5, 10 deep breaths with the kids as a reward for when we do a good job. Those things can all be like little tiny ways of making your classroom a little bit more joyful and a little calmer. But again, like if it's not something that you want to do, don't do it. Don't do it. And I like work on your own practice first before you bring it in, because I mean, many reasons, but one of the things is like, we got to remember to be age appropriate, and we don't want to jump in with kids and throw them in the deep end of like, let's notice what's going on in your body. If they've gone through a bunch of trauma, like it's a, like in the, I worked on it in the elementary school age mostly. And I kept most things super light and quick because like, this is not, I don't know what these kids have experienced, and I don't need to have them spend time with, let's say, a body scan for an extended period of time with a body they don't feel safe in, or if they have asthma, focusing on their breath. Like, there's these things that, and it all has to be optional, right? Like, this has to be something that kids opt into. It's not a easy, it's not a silver bullet thing. It's not gonna fix everything for anybody, but it might fix something for someone, and it might, most likely it'll fix something for the teacher. Is how I noticed it in my classroom, is it really helped me self-regulate, and that transformed the classroom, and it helped kids self-regulate as well. I really like it as gamifying it is a way that I enjoy doing it. And so making it into something that's fun for the kids. For example, I play a simple game where have a kid that blows up on you, jump up and run out the classroom. Now, when I point at you, I want you to jump up and run out the classroom. Kid does it. You're in the middle of instruction. You point at the kid, he jumps up, runs out the classroom. And this is the kid that, you know, you do this on the first day, right? So next year, you can do this year during testing. Who cares? But the first day of school, you know what kid it's going to be. You can tell when they walk in. You go over, you whisper, hey, when I point at you, I want you to do this thing. And they're like, yeah, that's my cup of tea. I'm on it. So they do it. Then you keep teaching. You don't act like anything happened. Then you walk over to the door. You open the door. You say, hey, give a round of applause for our actor. He was testing you to see where you're allocating your attention. Because you have a choice. Are you going to give him your attention when he does that, or her? Let's say it. Girls can be naughty too. Or are you going to give me your attention when I'm trying to teach you? Because that's a choice that you make every day. So mindfulness about allocating attention on purpose to the present moment, what's going right. Because like what you'll notice when you start doing that is you'll be teaching. A kid will blow up and do that later in the day. Same kid maybe. Runs out the classroom. All the other kids are like, oh, he's testing us. She's testing us. And they stay with you. And there are kids that, after you do that a few times, I was wildly successful with this in a couple of classrooms that had a lot of special education kids in it. Kids would just like oppositional defiance, whatever. And they'd jump up, boom, blow up, run out the door. And kids would just stay locked in on me. And I was like, wow, I'm really onto something here. And so highly recommend that as a little, and it's mindfulness. And what you get to do at that point is like, okay, at the end of the day, I'm going to be keeping track of who's the most focused. And if it's you, you get to test the class tomorrow. And so it becomes part of the reward system. Like, oh, I paid attention all day. And so I get to tomorrow run up and try to distract people. And the rules are don't touch, don't scream, you know, whatever. But like, then like when I point at you, you get to be the one that does it. And so kids like, and this really works with ADHD kids who need something to focus on because they're like, now they're playing a game. And yeah, that, and highly recommend. That's how I teach. I call it the magic of sitting still.
So one of the things that I like to do is make things very simple, very accessible for new teachers, right? Just because they're overwhelmed. Nowadays we have very short attention spans across the board. And so what I'm going to do is make sure that I'm understanding what you just said. I just took a lot from what you just said, but the three biggest things that I took, one, work on your own mindfulness first. You can't teach other students mindfulness if you're not practicing and you're not prepared. Two, start small. Start in bite-sized pieces if you really do want to implement this and you are serious. And three, if you're not serious, just don't do it. Like, this is not a push. It's not a rush. Just don't do it if it does not work for you.
Yeah. Be authentic to yourself. And yeah, maybe someday you'll find that it does and makes a difference in your life. I like the non-judgmental piece of it is so big because like as teachers, we're like always like we want our kids to be successful, right? And like a kid, like when I first started teaching, I mean, this is a decade ago, kids would be failing my tests, right? And I'd be so mad at the kids, right? Frustrated with them. Like, I taught you this. I know we went over this yesterday and then for the last 3 weeks. You got to be able to show up and be like, this child did their best. And that's all they had. They gave everything in the tank and they don't know the answer to your quiz. And like, that's it. And there's no, like, that non-judgmental awareness of what's going on right now is like that kid showed up and tried and couldn't do it. Now, like, what attitude are you going to bring into that child's life tomorrow?
I laugh because I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, man. You were looking at me, taking notes, man, writing it all down.
Like, as an educator, who has not said this, right? Literally looking at your kids as they're taking a test, and you're like, oh, my gosh, what have I been doing for the last month? Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely see sometimes in my life, personal and work, where mindfulness could have been a lifesaver.
It's about changing your orientation in life and like, oh, if you're breathing, there's more that's going right with you than wrong with you. Like, what's going right? It changes how you relate to people around you, makes you less judgmental. And that's the hardest part about being a teacher for me personally is it changes your personality because you are getting programmed to evaluate people. And it becomes really difficult to be there for the other people in your life when you spend all day evaluating the 30 people in front of you.
I agree.
And so, like, mindfulness is, like, on the way home, listen to a song, loving kindness podcast, whatever it is, like, changes your headspace and lets you go from that was work, this is home. It's, yeah, taking some mindful steps on your way into the thing, being like, this is it. I'm done for today. I locked it. I'm done. Setting boundaries between your home life and your work life. That's part of the personal practice that can be really transformative when you first start teaching. Because when you first start teaching and you're overwhelmed, you're working 80 hours a week trying to, like, get these kids to behave, and it's not going to happen. Like, they're going to beat you often. And if you don't sleep well and you can't turn it off, they're going to beat you more the next day than if you fixed all the things that went wrong. Like, you need to get a good night's sleep. You need to leave it at work. Do your work at work, work into the evening at work. But when you get home, you need a sanctuary, and you need to be able to reset everything so that you can get ready to go again. And so it's about being aware of how you as a human being are doing. Because, like, your first year of teaching, true or false, you were working way too much.
Absolutely.
And shutting it off was tough. You wake up thinking about the kids, go to sleep thinking about the kids.
Absolutely. And I was pregnant my first year as an educator. So yeah, it was a lot going on. I have learned now that the drive home is the best time for me to practice my mindful moments. And my kindergarten teacher, so there is talking all day. It is nonstop. And so literally the only time I get peace and quiet is on the car ride from my school to pick up my daughter. Mm-hmm. And I choose that time to sit in silence. I'll sit in the car before I leave the parking lot just for a few minutes on the way to get my daughter. Like you just said, I'm shedding everything that has happened that day. Work is left at work. The moment I pick up my daughter, it is my time to spend with her. Then we have our few hours together in the evening where I have to stay focused on her. And then the rest of the time is me. Like, I'm not bringing work home anymore. It's nothing that important at this point.
But when you first start teaching, it probably will be for a lot of, if there are first year teachers listening to this, it will be that important, because it's like, you want to do a good job and you don't have the years of experience that you have. And so, like, when you are putting in those long hours, it's even more important to have that shut up.
I would definitely agree. My goal is, with this podcast, is that teachers don't go through that. That teachers don't go through the same things that we went through, because at the end of the day, it's not necessary. There's no way you should be bringing home work every night of the week and working your weekends. You're spinning your wheels. One of the things, and it's really hard to let go. It's really hard. But one of the things that I really try to work with new teachers on is that right now you're in a space where your district or most districts want you to use a scripted curriculum. Your very first year teaching, use the scripted curriculum. You haven't been teaching long enough to know what works and what doesn't work. You're repeating what someone else said, because they don't like the curriculum, or they said it doesn't work for a student. As a first year teacher, you really don't know that. So use your first year to learn. Don't reinvent the wheel. Don't remake lesson plans. That's what most of us will go home at night and do. No, just follow the curriculum as is. And that right there will take some of the stress off. So hopefully with this podcast, they won't have to go through that. They'll pick up enough tips and tricks that they can avoid that. And my hope is that they will at least start to explore what mindfulness really means. And over the summer, at least start practicing. Take those small steps. Do those small things. Like you were just talking about, sitting in silence or listening to music or a particular podcast. I think you mentioned love and kindness. Those are small steps that you can do over the summer.
Yeah, for sure.
So getting back to those new teachers, when we think about how busy that they will be, right? Our schedules are jam-packed from the moment the kids walk in to the moment that they leave us, and all the additional responsibilities. And for elementary school teachers, we teach multiple content. How do you see new teachers realistically incorporating mindfulness into the classroom? And I think you spoke to this, but I'm going to ask you to bring it back up again and give a couple of very solid ways that they can do this.
Yeah, we'll do a quick, on your way to work, you can listen to, there's an ad-free app out of the University of Wisconsin called the Healthy Minds Program. And it's a breakdown of different ways that mindfulness can change your brain, and you can learn about it, and you can share your data actually with the University of Wisconsin, which is kind of neat. Richard Davidson is a neuroscientist out there, and he did some really phenomenal work putting brain scanners on monks that had meditated silently for 3 years, and like he came up with, this is what mindfulness can do. And then they use this data And if it makes a difference in your life, you do these self like, oh, I feel this way. And then they can use that data. So yeah, you can listen to a podcast, to a like a meditation on your way to work. And then when you get into work, you open the door on your, you could do a like grounding walking meditation to the door, something that like, what energy do you want to bring? I'm a big fan of pairing breath with values. And so perhaps I am stable, I am kind. You can breathe in stable, out kind, in stable, out kind as you walk to the door, right? And like, if you're a new teacher, being stable and kind, if you can accomplish those two things, you're doing a good job. So yeah, show up that way, right? And then show up with your kids. You got your opening circle. I like mantras are ways to incorporate mindfulness into your classroom. You have a kids, somebody says something, and you know, like everybody says, I see you, their name, right? And it's like part of your ritual. So they like, oh, I see you. And then you can build up, I'm here for you. I'm glad you're here. I know you're there and I'm so happy. There's these, yeah, that you can mantras as an introduction and a way for kids to see each other. You can have kids do 5 deep breaths after being successful at something. You can do a quick smile to your toes, smile to your fingers, smile to your nose, like where kids notice this part of your body, smile to that part of your body. And it's just in, out, maybe 3 breaths for a body part in terms of, and kids love it when you're like, smile to your smile. And they're like, and you make silly faces. They love it, love that part of it. And then let's say when you do lunch, have the kids practice eating a piece of fruit mindfully. You can just say, all right, look at it, listen to it, take it. We're going to eat for, nobody talks for 5 seconds while we eat it. Hold it in your mouth, don't bite, you know, and you can play a game with them noticing what it's like to eat food, especially like fresh food. If you're in a school that has some fresh food, and they're going to be like, oh yeah, this is delicious. And you can have the kids practice leading it. The Smiling Minds app it's an Australian government app, has some free meditations you can use. You can, yeah, a fun way to do storytelling. I like to do storytelling with the kids. And when there's a pause, I'll say the character took 3 deep breaths, and then all the kids will take 3 deep breaths before I continue, right? Or like, you know, and so, yeah, you can incorporate it into reading time. Let me think if there's, I'm trying to think about other parts of the day. I think those would be, I mean, that'd be a lot of good steps. And then on your way home, put on something that's joyful. Make a ritual out of your commute home, like we talked about, so that you're able to leave what you did at work and try to be a human the rest of the day. Because when you're around the other people that you're around in your life, being a teacher makes you incredibly critical, and you've got to figure out how to turn off the criticism so that you can be a person. Because if you're a teacher in a room with your spouse, who are they, right? And I don't need my spouse to be my student. That's a terrible relationship that a lot of teachers, I think, fall into with not just their spouse, but their kids and whoever else, right?
I would agree with that statement as well. I had to work through that. I used to do that to my sisters all the time. We talk all the time. And one day my sister had to tell me, like literally she said, LaToya, I'm not one of your kids. And I didn't even realize that clearly it was my tone in which, you know, what I was using with her that made her say that. So I definitely agree with that statement. And it takes some time to notice that. How has you practicing mindfulness influenced you as an educator?
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I don't know if you want me to be honest with you, but here we are. Is like, it's part of the reason that like I stepped out of the classroom is I can't handle that many nervous systems and like engaging with that many nervous systems on a consistent basis and be the person I want to be. And so after diving into mindfulness for a couple of years, I took a break and actually spent 3 months living at a meditation center, learning about mindfulness. And now I'm transitioning back into like professional work. And it's been like, it's difficult to find a role in which you're able to both get paid, obviously, and be the person you want to be. And so, yeah, it has made me much less judgmental of other people. I think I'm still very critical with myself, and that's the next frontier for me personally. But I think that's definitely what I'm working on right now. So again, like I think that I put myself through some really like my first year teaching in Louisiana, particularly, there were 7 of us hired and 2 of us finished the year. I don't know if I should have done it, right? Like, I don't know if I should have stuck it out. And I did. And like, in hindsight, I'm glad I did. But I think if I had been aware of what I was actually going through on a consistent basis, I don't know if I would have. There are just like schools that are, or in situations that are really hard. And when we like get in touch with like what we're doing to ourselves, we might like quit teaching. And so I do believe that it's possible to bring a joyful disposition into a classroom on a consistent basis. I've seen teachers do it. I've seen you do it. I've seen other teachers do it. But it takes a lot. It takes an incredible amount of fortitude to get it done. Yeah, I don't have an answer for what people should do in terms of like, if you start noticing that this is too much for you, like what's next is like, hopefully your podcasts are solving all their problems. Cause like, it's a really difficult job to be like a surrogate parent for 30 nervous systems at a go for 8 hours a day. We do that year after year for decades, right? And like, it's not like a sane amount of work that we're putting people through.
One of my goals with this podcast is to support and uplift those educators who want to genuinely be in the classroom. I think people have different seasons in their life, and maybe this season you do want to be an educator, but after you've done it for a while, maybe you decide that this is not the space for you, and I think that is completely okay. I personally think, similar to you, that you have to be happy with wherever it is that you choose to work, and you have to be okay with the person that you are. Education does change you. It does. You have to decide if you like this shift, if you like this change, if you like the person that education has you to become. That's one of the things that I still struggle with, being part of a system that I am conflicted with. And it's one of the things that I'm still working through. But I'll be honest with you, I also feel that education is where I'm supposed to be. I don't necessarily know in what capacity, because we know that you can be within the system of education or be an educator without being in the classroom. That's one of the things that I am still working through. But for me right now, in this moment, I know I'm where I'm supposed to be, and I'll stay there, and I'll continue to support and uplift educators who want to genuinely stay. I would never advocate for someone to stay in a space or a field that you are not happy.
Right. Yeah. And it's also like, it's okay to try different schools. Like,
agreed.
I think that I've worked in 4 different public schools in the US and 2 and in rural schools in Cambodia. And they're all just like categorically different experiences, and all will be better and worse in different ways. It's very conceivable that if you change schools, you could find a better fit for you.
Yep. Definitely agree. Would definitely recommend that you change schools before you're leaving, before you completely leave the field of education. I definitely went through that period. I graduated with my doctorate, and as I was graduating, I was done. It was not even tail end of COVID. I would say middle roughly of COVID. My doctoral program, it went virtual, and the district I was in, we just were not handling COVID well. And I was just like, I am done. We are not here for kids anymore. We are not here for educators anymore. There is no purpose in me being here. So I went through that space in my life. And to be honest, I'm glad that I didn't leave. I'm glad that I stuck it out. However, I also acknowledge that I still have a lot of growing to do within the space of education. With all the things that we have discussed, and I feel like you may have just done that, but what parting words would you leave with new teachers as we end our podcast today?
I think that like your work's incredibly important, but you're just one person, and you can't be all things to all people if you don't take care of yourself. My first year teaching, I was working way too hard. Again, most people didn't finish that year, new teachers. And there was a teacher I worked with that I really admired. She's, to this day, one of the best teachers I've ever seen. And she told me this, you can call it a koan, like a story with a thing. It's like Tarzan, right? It was like, trying to escape with Jane, right? And he chases down, or he finds some fruit or some food, and he eats all the food himself and doesn't share any with Jane. And Jane's like, what did you do that for? I'm hungry. And he's like, if Tarzan doesn't live, nobody lives. and like, remember, like in this giving profession, that you're Tarzan for all these kids. If you don't figure it out how to take care of yourself and like slow down and enjoy the process, you're never going to be the teacher you could become. While you're doing it, if you're able to enjoy it, and you can shift and slow down enough to see your growth and see what you're becoming, it'll be a much different process of growth, because you'll instead of just like surviving it, you'll be living it. And so I would love for them to do that. I also like, yeah, again, you're only one person in this entire ecosystem of education, and you're going to see this kid maybe 1 year, maybe several if you're a specials teacher, but there's no, yeah, there's like, you're not God. You're not going to fix all the problems in any child's life. You might inspire one or two, you might inspire the whole class, who knows? Like, things are amazing, things are possible in awesome classrooms, no doubt about it, but like, you're doing your best and that's all you got. You got it, and refill your tank. Thank you.
I agree. You have to take care of you first. With that, I think that's the perfect way for us to end our podcast today. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insight on mindfulness. We have a lot of like solid strategies that teachers can use immediately if they so choose to move forward with mindfulness in the classroom. With that being said, to all of our listeners, don't forget to like and share this podcast. If you know of any educators who would be interested in mindfulness, or to be honest, who just need a pick me up, because I think the very end of our conversation was extremely powerful and something that all educators need to hear. With that being said, always remember that you are not just surviving in your classrooms, you are thriving with a purpose. Until next time.